It is Wednesday, April the 2nd. Hard to believe that now we are a third of the year, or a third of the way through this year. Nevertheless, let's get started. Now, as I record this right now, it is March the 25th, but this is, of course, the April 2nd episode. But it's March the 25th. We have record-breaking temperatures here in Seattle. It's about 70 degrees, which is not usual for this time of year. But coincidentally, there is a weather warning tomorrow for a potential tornado to hit. So hopefully I'm still around for the episode subsequently after that. But so this is the episode. This is part two of the interview with Sean Hershey. In all likelihood, there will be a hiatus for at least next week and potentially the week after that from this podcast. Family and I were going to New York and we're going to DC, and I just can't wait. This has been a trip that's been a bucket list thing for the last 15 years. I've wanted to go. When as a kid, when I was six, we're going to see the White House. We're going to see the Capitol Building. We're going to see the Smithsonian. We're going to see the World Trade Center. We're going to see the Lion King on Broadway. It's going to be amazing. So we've been counting down to this for months, and now it's finally here. So without further ado, though, here's part two with Sean Hershey, LCSW.
In my first session with Liz, I'm telling her blah, blah, about my childhood, whatever, whatever. And she says to me in our first session, it sounds like your parents weren't very attuned to you, which was something that is true. And yet is not the way that I would have conceptualized my life. Like, I'll back up and give sort of an overview. So my TMS story is like, I grew up gay, closeted in the Catholic Church in St. Paul, Minnesota, in a very Irish Catholic community where I just like, it was not it for me. Like I did not fit in there. And it was complex in the way that, you know, is typical of a TMS story where it wasn't all bad, you know, like I was loved by a lot of people in my community. And I like, you know, I was very in that world. Like I had like a role in that world, and yet I was it was very awkward for me. Like it was not the vibe for me. As I was recovering, a lot of my processing went into processing that, which was very helpful and necessary. TMS therapy helped me take it a couple steps back from there. So working with Liz, she helped me like really question my family upbringing and how that influenced my TMS. And I was in a world where I was thinking like my parents were great, like, because I mean they were in a lot of ways. My parents really were. So I grew up my brother, who's 2 years younger than me, and then my mom and my dad. And my parents were like wonderful people in a lot of ways, and yet my family was very, very rigid, very like perfectionistic, very focused on being good, quote unquote. And in their mind, being good meant like nothing in my house would have been allowed that was like self-centered, materialistic, vain, anything grandiose, and anything like one was supposed to be like helpful and kind and like, you know, good to others and think of others first, which is like, you know, those are all like wonderful things. There's nothing wrong with that. But the rigidity of my early life was such that like that stuff was not allowed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all of like their human beings have all kinds of desires, some of which are self-centered, some of which are sort of greedy sometimes. And that stuff was so not allowed in my family of origin that I had completely cut myself off from like thinking any of that was okay.
Do you mind giving an example?
Oh, what's a good example? I guess here's one really small one that just like really sticks out in my mind. There was a time where this was older. Like now, this is an example of like, I'm like in my 20s. We were on a family vacation. And at the time I had like longer hair. Right now I just got a haircut, so my hair looks like super weird. Yeah. But I had longer hair at that time. And the family vacation, we had to like share a bathroom just because of the way the hotel was set up. And I was like putting gel in my hair in the morning. And my mom walks past the bathroom and was like, "Oh, you're putting gel in your hair?" And I was like, "Yeah." And she was like, "I thought it just looked that way naturally," with this very clear judgmental tone. Like, yeah, you shouldn't be doing anything like that. Like, and I, since I know her, I know underneath that is like, kind of like, don't start thinking you're like too special, or don't start thinking that like stuff like this should matter to you, because it shouldn't matter to you. And if it does, that's a problem. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Little example, but it's something that I think about all the time. And I guess as I'm telling this to you and imagining your listeners listening to this, what I'm thinking is like, I want to encourage people to think, because like everybody has a different story. Like everybody else, everybody's family is different. Everybody's upbringing is different. Everybody's conditioning around like what parts of you are okay and what parts of you are not okay is different. But in me telling this story, I would encourage people to think like, where did that come up in your life? You know, where were you just putting in hair gel in the morning and then told like, that's not okay. Like that's a part of you that's not acceptable and I don't want to see it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I encourage people to like, to think about that for themselves.
And so what you mean by that is like thinking of subsequent situations that made you feel the same way that you felt in the bathroom that day.
Exactly. Exactly. Because, you know, people act in patterned ways.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody's doing that one time, they might be doing it many times. And if it's, I mean, something like that, like certainly like my parents did stuff like that constantly. But okay, getting back to what this has to do with TMS work and part three, which I think of part three, which, you know, could be called like power work. It could be called patience and kindness for yourself. I think of it as patiently attuning to your true self. Because what I learned in my own therapy was that like my parents paid a lot of attention to me for sure. So I had just sort of always, even as a therapist, you know, like who had done a lot of work on attachment and helping other people work through their relationships with their parents. Like, you know, I've thought about a lot of this before. Even so, this stuff is very protected. Like it lives in a very protected part of the brain. And there's a lot of defenses around it. One of which some would say is TMS and chronic pain. But this, doing this work with Liz really opened my eyes to like, oh, my parents paid a lot of attention to me, but it was with the intention of shaping me, mm-hmm. quote unquote, shaping me into the person that they wanted me to be, rather than with the intention of allowing me to be the person that I truly was.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people with TMS have that similar theme. Even if, you know, everybody's story is going to be different, but if your family seems like a great place to grow up, which mine was in a lot of ways, if there is this dynamic, like your family is shaping you into someone versus allowing you to be who you are, you will most likely take that on yourself and internalize that. Like I spent years of my life shaping, you know, trying to shape myself into being whoever I wanted to be at the time. And a lot of that was an internalization of who my family wanted me to be.
Mm-hmm.
And not just allowing myself to be like who I really am. Like if I'm someone who really wants to have gel in my hair today, rather than feel all this guilt or feel like that's somehow wrong, or like, you know, in sort of extreme Christian language, like that's the devil's work. It's, that self-centeredness, the glamour of evil. Really, it's like, that's just you.
Yeah.
Like, that's just you. and you can feel safe with that. And so what to wrap this up, what the message that I want to leave people with that was so, so helpful for me is like, don't try to shape yourself into someone who you're not. Allow yourself to be who you are. And the reason that's so important for TMS work is, well, there's two different theories. One of which is your symptoms are communicating to you. So with that mindset, the symptoms are telling you, like, let me live, like, let me be myself. Like, the symptoms are like, it's your inner self kind of raging out, mm-hmm. like, let me be myself. So that's one theory, which is totally possible. I believe that. The other theory would be that the symptoms are there because of the pain threat cycle, which also, I think both might be true. I don't know. Some of the stuff, like, I don't know if there's any way to really know it, but if you as a person see a lot of your own qualities as a threat, like, I shouldn't be self-centered ever. I shouldn't think of myself first ever. I shouldn't care about, you know, whatever I care about. I shouldn't be interested in this. I should focus more on this and that. But I just am A, B, C, D, E, F, G, you know, whatever, all the qualities that people in your life haven't liked about you and you have learned not to like about yourself. If you see all of those things as a threat, every time they rise in your body, that it will feel like a threat, which easily could be causing pain because mm-hmm. of the pain threat cycle. So the goal is to just allow this shit and just make friends with who you really are, as much as you don't like it, which I think Nicole Sachs's work does a really good job of putting someone in the mindset of, like, get used to feeling things you don't like, yeah. because it is better than feeling chronic pain. And being who you really are, even though it is hard to accept, it is the way forward if you want to move out of chronic pain.
It's a very small example, but I think you'll understand. My 7-year-old daughter, this cracks me up because she's like, she's such a miniature version of me in so many ways, looks just like me, talks sure. a lot like me when I was a kid. I mentioned it before we started recording. I'm a big, this is going to sound so insignificant, but, you know, to some people, so does hair gel, right? So it's just like, it's just.
I know, right? And it's therapy, so let's go.
She's a 7-year-old girl, right? It's supposed to be all, you know, princesses and, like, this is kind of the thing. She is a diehard pro wrestling fan, which you don't expect from a 7-year-old girl. I never put it in front of her. She got curious about it. She now wants to watch every single show with dad. And yeah. her and this other girl, also in her class, also 7 years old, they love wrestling and they talk about it at every recess. But they feel embarrassed about talking about it out loud. So they go to the corner of the, like, play, not the playground, but, like, way out in the field. And they yeah. just sit there and they talk about it the entire recess. And they call it, and we'll walk down to the school to play in the playground and she'll tell me, show me these places. They call it WWE corner is what they call it. And, like, they don't talk about it in front of other kids because they're afraid they're going to be, you know, ostracized for being 7-year-old little girls that are loving watching pro wrestling. It's like, right. that's what comes to mind when you talk about that stuff.
Oh, yes, absolutely. We're on the same page.
Yeah,
absolutely. And we think, well, at least I think a lot of people with TMS, we think that we have so much control over who we are. Mm-hmm. Like, we think we get to decide what we like and what we don't like. And, oh, wouldn't it be cool to be the kind of person who only likes to, you know, do whatever, like whatever it may be, whatever your value system is. We like to think that we have so much control over, like, we can conform to the value system that we want to have. We don't have that much control. Like, the amount of control we have over who we really are, I think, is actually kind of, like, laughably small.
Yeah. You
know, like, we are who we are, and it's so much easier in life to just get to know who you are and allow yourself to be that person. And it's so nice to hear that your daughter has, like, a friend that she can be herself with.
Yeah. That's cute. Yeah, they found each other in the classroom. So it's Audrey and Ashley, and they're the two wrestling fans. And it's like, it's a crack up because it's something that I'll ask her every, because the big show is every Monday. And so they talk about what could happen tonight on the Monday show. And then Tuesday, they spend all recesses talking about what happened on the night before. And a lot of
great podcast hosts.
No, yeah, no, I know. I'll tell you what, like, maybe not as 7-year-olds, but sure, you know, sure as shit is like, if they're still into it at like 12 or 13, listening to two like teenage girls have a podcast to talk about pro wrestling, like that is money. Like, that's money. You know what I mean? Like, that's totally. That's good. Yeah. You know, the other thing, and I don't know if I'm sure that there's people, the thing that I was telling a friend of this, friend of mine, this, where, I have lots of friends with lots of obscure hobbies, and as obscure as they think that their hobbies are, I'm always like, if there's one thing this podcast has taught me, it's that people are unique, but there's 1,000 people listening to this right now that are exactly like you and exactly like me. You know what I mean? Like, right. There's so much shared interest, and, it's an interesting thing. The other thing that was coming to mind when you were talking about that, as far as like the hair gel example, a recurring thing that comes up for me, my wife points this out sometimes. Sometimes it depends on the mood I'm in. Sometimes it drives me nuts. Sometimes I'm like, yes, you're right. I know she's right, even though if it drives me nuts sometimes. But there's always a recurrent. We grew up without a lot of money and lots of guilt around spending a lot of money because it was very loud and talked about. And so with me into my adulthood as a 39-year-old in a couple of weeks, it doesn't matter how much money I make or what I'm buying. It could be, yeah, sure, I'll get the guacamole at Chipotle on my bowl. That brings an amazing amount of guilt. So it doesn't matter if the purchase is $10,000 or the purchase is $5. The feeling is exactly the same of this like erroneous feeling of guilt or shame about wanting to buy something or spend money in any way. That to me is like the recurring theme of the childhood, which is sort of what you were talking about with the gel.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Right. I mean, it sounds like you've, and some level, there's parts of you that feel like you're not allowed to get anything that's special, be it guacamole or be it, which honestly is outrageously expensive.
Let's be real. Well, as we record this about an hour ago, the tariffs for Mexico did roll back for 4 weeks. So, you know, maybe it won't. Yeah. Get your guac now. Cause in 31 days, that shit's going to be really expensive.
But truly on a deeper level, like, yeah, I mean, I think you're hitting on something that is profound. Say you weren't doing this work and say you're, you know, well, I don't know, whatever. Say you had some terrible symptom imperative and you spent your entire life, every time you bought something, thinking that you were a bad person in some way, you know, like how much fighting against yourself does that introduce into your mind body system? You know, like, feel I'm a bad person. I'm not allowed to have anything. And this is why I think of part three of the work as like patiently attuning to your true self. Because I think patience and kindness for yourself is beautiful. And when I started that, I didn't even know who myself was. You know what I mean? I was like, okay, I should like be patient and kind with myself. Like, I guess be nice to myself or like, you know, like I didn't really know what that meant. Now that I have a better sense of like, oh, myself is myself. It's the things I like about myself. It's the things I don't like about myself, but that is me.
Yeah.
That is the thing that I'm supposed to be patient and kind towards. And I have to like tune into who that even is. Like yourself, for example, someone who just wants the fucking guacamole sometimes. Yep. Like, hey, like just tune into that and let yourself be that. Yeah. That's my advice to people.
You know, we're quite a bit over, but there was one question. I feel like you've sort of answered this, but I promised I'd ask it. Before we went on, I had said the question that I continuously get from people is, so there's people that are all in, read the books, listen to the podcasts, watch the YouTube videos of everybody in the space. For all intents and purposes, they are all in. However, they have lingering symptoms. What is going on there with those people?
Here's my guess. And I feel like I can answer this question well because I have been one of those people big time. And in some ways with my hip, I still am that person where I'm like, there's still days. I never have severe pain anymore. That's totally over. But I still have like annoying, nagging pain in my hip sometimes. And I'm like, damn, like at least once a day, there's some like annoying nagging hip pain. So I'm coming at answering this question with a lot of empathy and a lot of like, I get it, because yeah. I am there and certainly have been there even more so earlier in my journey. Okay, like I said, there's three parts to this work. So what I'm hearing in your question is that people are saying like they're doing part one, like, and going really hard and doing a good job at part one, which is, I think of it as the psychological work. That's like really understanding like there's nothing wrong with you. And when it's like, for me, for example, when my hip hurts, knowing like, you know, if there's a part of me that's like, oh, I shouldn't go to the gym today because of my hip, knowing like, don't fall into that trap. Your hip is fine. This is an emotional or psychological thing. Move forward. It's and you know, get it. The more information you get, the better, because like, the brain needs a lot of information to really sync up to this new paradigm, because most people are not thinking this way. That's for sure. Most people are going to just like add to your fear and make things worse.
Yeah.
So what I'm hearing in this question is like, people are really doing part one of the work, but they're neglecting parts two and three. Probably not because they're intentionally trying to, but because they really don't know what they're missing.
Mm-hmm.
So part two being facing the emotions that are really hard to face, and part three being patiently tuning into your true self and not seeing yourself as a threat. So like, to reiterate, it's like part two is like, the emotions are not a threat. Part three is your true self is not a threat, and you can like just take care of and attune to yourself. So my advice for people is move on from part one and do parts two and three. Much easier said than done, especially the emotional stuff, because people are like, but I'm journaling, I've tried, I've done everything and nothing comes. My advice to that is like, keep digging, because if you still pain, there's more stuff there.
Hang out on the line even after we say goodbye, because there's no real way for me to like, I don't want to just hang up on you. So,
thank you. I appreciate it.
This was a lot of fun. I don't know what I expected, but this was tremendous. So thank you for coming on. Thank you for reaching out to me.